Hello and welcome to episode 1284 of The Sleeper and the Bust. It is Thursday, April 18th. I'm your host, Paul Spohr, joined this afternoon by Justin Mason. Justin, good afternoon, sir.
How you doing?
Doing pretty well. Watching this crazy Tigers game. Sorry, Jack Leiter fans, if you ran him. I understand you got to take a shot against the Tigers, but he got cooked. Kenta Maeda got cooked. I think we could be seeing a Phantom IL there.
Kenta Maeda is cooked.
Kenta Maeda. 7-7 in the eighth right here. And so we'll see what happens. Tigers trying to get a split in the four gamer. They're fighting. When Maeda went up there and, oh my God, Tavares, that's going to drop. When they got smoked early, I was like, oh, okay, they're going to lose three games to one here, but they fought back. They beat up Leiter. And like I said, they got it to 7-7 here, although a one out double there for Leody. A guy we both love, but I don't want to see him doing well here, especially against my boy Shelby Miller. That was a sick little double. But anyway, how you doing? How's your day going?
Day's going all right. It's 75 degrees here in Northern California and sunny and but like cool enough last night where my office is still cool at
nice. Noon.
So not like sweating my balls off or anything. Not wearing yet. Pants. That's
you're not wearing pants according to the sign. Yep. Mid-80s here. It's getting warmer. Jen's got her window open, which, you know, I'm a lizard, right? I forget who it was, but somebody called Jen and I lizards before, and it was really funny to me because we love it hot. Or we just don't like the cold. She takes it to another level. Like, I don't want my window open at 84. I like having the air on. I have a fan on. I'm wearing a sweatshirt. I could wear a t-shirt, sure. But she goes next level. I walked into her office, and I was like... so muggy, so hot. So, and it's about to be super hot. She doesn't keep it open during the summer. Don't worry, y'all. She's not actually trying to roast herself. Short slate today. A little bit of a, I don't want to say a day off, but like a little bit of a catch up day for us. You know, those of us who do this, you know, you do it for a partial living. I do it for a full living. Never complaining about baseball, right? It's always great, but it's not bad when the fire hose gets turned down a little bit. We got four games. Most of them in the day. Is there any tonight?
Well, yeah, just the Giants game tonight.
Yeah, just the Giants game for the later night. There's a 6:40 game.
Oh, Cubs. Miami, yeah,
Cubs too, yeah. And then y'all's. So, and those are 2 hours apart. So it's nice chill night. And we just caught. Don't tell me they did not touch.
No, I don't think they tagged him.
Are you absolutely joking me right now? Our defense, dude, has been so bad.
I don't know how.
I don't know how they missed him here. And both guys are going to be safe.
Replay.
All right, you're ahead of me.
Yeah.
What the hell happened?
Okay, here we go.
So he got caught.
He just swiped right around, right over the top of him. Right over. Oh, wow. So was that Leody Tavares was running between second and third base. Urshela had the ball right in front of him. And he like, Leody Tavares just ducked down like a child.
Like, you know who would be very proud of that? Josh Harrison. Remember his rundown exploits?
And oh my God. And they just threw away. He probably shouldn't have gone to second. He probably should have just taken the. Wow. So, and Torkelson just threw a ball to second base on just a slow hop and missed just. In.
All right, so we got an episode tomorrow. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, at least we get to see if Kirby Yates is the dude here in a little bit.
I think he is.
I think he is as well.
He came in yesterday in the closer. It wasn't a save situation, but where the closer would be in such a situation. So I think he's the dude. It's definitely not Leclerc, y'all. I think you can cut your Leclerc shares. He came in a tie-tie game, a 7-7 game in the seventh. D-Rob is the guy to hold, I think, if you don't have Kirby Yates, but it is Kirby Yates. God, I hate our defense so much. Anyway, five-game slate. We're going to talk some pitchers today. We talked early breakthrough hitters last time out and some weekend standouts, but we used that as a way of kind of promoting our player rater too, our new player rater. You go on the front page or any page where it has the toolbar there, mouse over fantasy, and then you'll see 2024 fantasy player rater. And it's like the other player writers you've seen. You know, it's got the categories there. Roster rate, start rate, ADP, and then a dollar value. Then you click the little card and you get even more info. So really fun tool. Very excited about it. We used it to kind of identify some hitters who were popping off and hanging out near the top of the ratings despite their lower ADP. And we're going to do the same for pitching today. And I'll tell you, you know, it's way too early to make these distinctions. But when you pair what you see on that page with all the injuries, it's really giving some merit to just not drafting pitchers until late, right? I mean, I did not have to scroll, Justin.
Yeah.
I got a 10-player list. I barely had to move the mouse. The top nine all qualify. Now, I did go a little deeper. I was going 200 or later, but they're all 150 or later if I wanted to include Jose Berríos, Bryce Miller, Shota Imanaga. I went a bit deeper. So I did scroll a little bit deeper, but the deepest guy we have is ranked 21st on this player rater. And it shows no ADP, but it's because he's a rookie, and I think there's some pulling in the data errors there. But he's a late pick, I can assure you that. So we got some guys here that went nice and late. One of them zipped up to the top of the list thanks to a shut piece. In fact, the top two guys threw shutouts this week, so it's probably no surprise that they zipped to the top here. That's telling you what one start can still do for you in a ranking like this. Not that they haven't been deserving otherwise, but to be 1-2 for Ranger Suarez and Tanner Houck, it's because of their respective shutouts. So let's talk about your boy Ranger Suarez first. And I say your boy because you've promoted him in the past. Mm-hmm. I actually clicked to see if we had talked about him at all this year, and the most recent episode that we did was the pitcher preview one. So I listened to what we had talked about, and we both liked him as somebody to get. We actually recommended him for me because my dumbass likes to get all the guys on crappy teams, so I never have any wins, which is happening again this year, by the way. So Ranger Suarez was the kind of guy for me to go with all my Angels and A's and guys like that on crummy teams. And he's 3-0 already. And the one thing we talked about was he might hit your whip, but everything else should be good. Well, he's not doing that. 173 ERA, 077 whip, 24% strikeout minus walk. It's been four amazing starts for Ranger Suarez. Like I said, he's 3-0. How much can he keep this up? Obviously not at this degree, but is he taking a step forward with the walk rate being cut more than in half and the strikeout rate jumping 6 points? What do you think of your boy Ranger Suarez now that we've seen four great starts?
I feel like I wish I had gotten more shares of Ranger Suarez is what I feel like. He's attacking the zone. He's raised his zone percentage 2 points, and he's going, listen, I may give up contact, but my defense is going to pick me up, and the defense has. And with filling up that zone, he's also gotten some more strikeouts, which is great. So I got to love what Ranger Suarez is doing. Now, he's going to get BABIP to death at some points. Like, that's just inevitable. And so do I think that the whip is going to stay, like, under one? Absolutely not.
Is it going to stay strong though? Can Ranger go sub 130? Because if he could be in the mid 120s,
yeah.
Now you're talking about an all formats, you know, impact arm, right?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think he could. I mean, the defense behind him isn't bad. Especially in the infield. So
in the infield, yeah.
I think, you know, and that's where we worry about it with Ranger Suarez. He's not a fly ball guy. So
that's a big part of this game this year. 62% ground ball. He's always been a ground ball guy. He is through the roof right now for Ranger Suarez. So could that be part of where the growth, you know, like legitimate growth comes?
It definitely could be. I don't want to like start jumping him up too high though, because he did do this complete game shutout versus the Rockies in Philadelphia. So minus Chris Bryant, right? So it wasn't a good team, but this is what you need to do if you want to have a good season, is you beat up on the bad team. So
he held his own against the Braves, which was his first start of the year. 5 innings, 3 hits, 3 runs, a homer, a walk, and 7 punchies, which I really liked there. Went to Washington, held up 6-2. 6th shutout against Pittsburgh, which we now see as a quality team. So it's been 2 good teams and 2 bad teams. And then Colorado was the other one there. So he's held his own against all four. I like this. I think he probably got picked up a bunch after the shutout, obviously. So the question is here, is it one start that's a dud and then you fully reassess on Suarez? Or do you give him like two bumps and you might get the test next week? He goes to Cincinnati and he might get at San Diego. Depends if Taiwan Walker returns or not. Mm-hmm. So he's a maybe two step, and it would be at Cincy, at San Diego. Where do you come out in shallower leagues with Ranger Suarez for that?
For getting the at San Diego, I feel a little bit better about it. Not that San Diego is like a team you want to attack, but the park is, right? Yeah. So the at Cincinnati is scary as hell. But he is getting 60%+ ground balls right now. So maybe the park doesn't hurt him nearly as much as it normally would another pitcher. I think it really depends on what my other options are. But a 15, I think you have to run him. In a 12, I think you're probably running him.
Yeah. And then in the 10, maybe. A 10, I think I need the confirmation of the second start. If I can't get that confirmation, I probably sit Ranger Suarez at Cincy only, if that's my only guarantee. And like I said, it's up in the air right now if Taiwan Walker will be back in time for that. If Taiwan Walker pitches Monday, then you can be assured that he's back. That's so we will have information on that. We don't have to wait all the way till the weekend. All right. And then the other shutout guy this week was Tanner Houck. You want to talk about a breezy game. An hour 49. He was dealing. And hey, don't sleep on what Ben Lively was doing. He was doing some nice things. Then Nick Sandlin and Wes Parsons came in from the bullpen for Cleveland, and they did well too. It's just that when Tanner Houck's giving you nothing, even two runs is enough to get the job done. So, you know, big shouts to Ben Lively there. But Tanner Houck was the man of the hour, and he bounced back from a real dud against LA. And the data says that when you face a team twice in a row, there is no indicator from the first start. If you're awesome in the first start, does not mean you'll be great in the second, vice versa, however you want to break it up. So he threw six shutout against them in LA, faces them 5 days later, and then Tanner Houck gives up seven runs, four earned on 12 hits with only two Ks. So one up, one down there. If you use that to bench him, you made a big mistake. And I will say, you made a big mistake even before I see the result here, because he had 12 shutout innings before that. I was still going to trust Tanner Houck against Cleveland. But yeah, you might have left a shut piece on your bench there. Three hits, no walks, nine strikeouts. Is Tanner Houck emerging here? Are we seeing a new version here? Because he was kind of the last one to make the rotation. The injuries, the Giolito injury, I think benefited him more. Maybe Whitlock, depending on where you were on them with the 4-5. But it certainly secured his spot. Where do you come out on Tanner Houck? Excuse me.
I think we are seeing a breakout, and I've never been a Tanner Houck guy. Like, I've always thought he was going to end up in the bullpen as like an elite multi-inning or even, you know, maybe a closer type of guy. I just never thought he was gonna
because of the platoon too, because he kind of throws side army. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I it also didn't seem like Boston was ever going to trust him. And sometimes you just have to go like, hey, man, I think he would be a really good arm, but the team doesn't trust him to do that. That being said, like, he has completely changed the way he attacks hitters. And when I say that, I mean, he completely attacks hitters now. Like, this is the Robbie Ray blueprint.
Explain that a little bit for people that don't know when he changed what he did to become a Cy Young winner, Robbie Ray.
So when Robbie Ray got traded over to the Blue Jays, the Blue Jays said, hey, listen, I know you've been doing things a certain way. You try to nibble around the edges. You're okay walking guys. But you also give up home runs, right? So we just would say we'd rather you not give up, you know, a three-run shot or a two-run shot or a grand slam. We'd rather you not walk the guys, put the ball into the zone, and make them hit it because your stuff is so good. Yeah, when they do hit it, it may go far, but like, they're not going to hit it that often. And that's how Robbie Ray became Robbie Ray. Robbie Ray was always the dude with like a million strikeouts, but he'd also walk the yard and give up home runs. And so like, you were buying the strikeouts and hopefully the wins if, you know, his offense could pick him up. And then he became this elite pitcher who still gave up home runs,
But that was because he lived in the zone instead of walking guys and then getting forced back into the zone. Now he just said, here it is, hit it. And he had occasionally hit it. But then they were solos instead of the devastating multi-run homers for Robbie Ray. Yeah. So you're saying you're seeing some of that out of Houck here from the right side.
Oh, I'm not seeing some of it. The Houck's career zone percentage is 41.
Okay.
Last year it was 42, which is right around where league average is. Okay. So league average it going in the zone. What do you think it is this year?
70.
Well, no, that'd be crazy. It's 49, which is the third highest in baseball.
I didn't have a good frame of reference there.
It's 49, which is the third highest in baseball.
So every one little percentage point is a pretty big move.
It's a massive zone rating. Jump.
Okay.
Yeah.
So going from 42 to 49 is crazy then. Okay. Yeah. So like I did not have that frame.
We were just talking about Ranger Suarez and I said, you know, he's attacking the zone. He went up 2%. That's a big jump. Like that's not like that. You know, you don't want to say, oh, it's going to be sustained at that. But it is a 2% jump in zone rate is a big jump, right? You're giving your, you know, over the course, especially over the course of a season, you're giving batters a lot of opportunities to make contact in the zone, right? So the fact that Tanner Houck is filling up the zone, and unlike Robbie Ray, Tanner Houck's never really had a home run problem. He's got good command. His control has been the issue for him for the most part. So the fact that he's going, I don't have a home run problem, so why am I not attacking the zone with my good stuff? I mean, I hate to say I completely missed on it. I was not, like, of all the Boston pitchers, he was the only one I wouldn't draft. But, like, this has front of the rotation type of stuff. Like, we're talking about,
nasty.
Like,
yeah,
like when you, and now health has been a huge issue for Houck. True. So like that can always derail him. And guys can, you know, we're only, you know, a few starts in, like he may be attacking certain teams this way. He, you know, and I'll go, as I talk, I'll go through his game log.
He's gotten the Angels twice. So, I mean, you know, they're not amazing. They're not worthless either, by the way. So, I will point that out.
But the only game where he has been below a 40% zone rate was the first one versus the Angels. I mean, the last two starts, he's been over 50% in the zone. Like he's saying, I'm attacking the zone and I'm going to make you hit it. Mm-hmm. And it's working.
That's awesome. So we love this from Houck. Obviously, another guy that, like, again, check your wire for Suarez and Houck in your 10 teamers, because 12s and 15s, they really shouldn't be available. They might actually be still available in some of your shallower leagues, just because if you assume and then you see somebody else pick them up, you're going to feel like a doofus. So at least do your due dilly and make sure that they have been picked up, because their roster rates were not particularly high coming into tonight, or coming into their starts, I should say. So I don't want anybody to miss out on them just assuming that they were picked up. You never know. But yeah, I like what Houck's doing. He looks amazing. And he looks like a righty Chris Sale. And Chris Sale, you know, was able to work with that whippy sidearm type of style for a long time. And he had to face a lot more opposite handers than Houck will. And he gets at Cleveland and home to the Cubs next week. That's an easy start. Yeah.
He's also not. Yeah, that's an easy start. Like he's all, and he is, like, I remember, like, when Houck first came up and Sale was on the Red Sox and stuff. And they, and like Pitching Ninja would do imposed gifs where, like, they're, you know, pitching on top of each other and you kind of see the both arms coming in at the exact same angle.
Yeah.
Like, one, it took a long time for Chris Sale to break down. Mm-hmm. And so don't think like, oh, he's got, you know, Houck has had injury issues, but he doesn't have to break down. He's also a much sturdier guy than Chris Sale.
You're saying, like, he has an adult type weight.
Yeah, exactly. Like he's 6'5", 230. Like he,
I,
like,
feel he, attacked I, by that.
You should.
On behalf of Chris Sale, yes. I should feel. Yeah. Okay, good. Then I'm getting your message.
Speaking across. Yeah. Speaking of your body type, did you see that Tristan McKenzie has been pitching with a tear in his elbow or something like that? He's just pitching through it.
I did not see that.
And that's probably why he's just been garbage this year.
That would explain everything. Yes.
Yeah. That's like, and terrible. He's just going to continue to pitch through it, even though he's just doing awful. So
his velo's down like a mile and a half to 2 miles, and he has a negative 11% strikeout minus one.
He is a instant cut.
Yeah. Once you hear that, that's an easy cut. And I love McKenzie, but I just, you're wish casting at that point.
And shout out to, I can't remember who was in the Discord that dropped the tweet in there.
You wouldn't start him against Oakland?
I mean, if you can't start him against Oakland, you can't.
You definitely got to cut him. And that'll be the thing. If he is bad in this one against Oakland this weekend for Tristan McKenzie, like maybe you don't agree with what we're saying here about moving on from McKenzie because of the busted arm. But then if he flops against Oakland, then you know it's time. That can be your indicator if you're still on the fence. By the way, Yates is indeed in. He's in the bottom of the eighth. Oh, with two outs. Two outs and two on. So he's trying to get the four out save.
Yeah, there's an article in The Athletic talking about it.
On McKenzie?
It was posted today. So
did you hear me about Yates, by the way?
No.
He's in the eighth. Two outs in the eighth. Yeah, so it's a four. They're going for the four out save. They are really trusting him to be the dude. Go.
I'll take it. Strike out Torkelson right here, and
three run bomb. Just turn this job upside down in Texas.
Not 0-2. He's not.
You shut your mouth.
You just made him look silly on that last one. Like, okay. All right.
Are you on a 1-2 count?
I'm a 1-2 count.
Okay, just making sure I don't know how different we are. We don't need to talk through the entire game.
If he hits a home run, you'll hear me yell.
Yes, that's for sure. I will be very thrilled. We will be yelling different things if that happens.
I mean, I've got Torkelson in a lot of spots, so it's like not like, you know.
He's coming out of it a little bit, by the way. I'm not anywhere near cutting him.
No.
I know some people are, though.
I get it, but I'm not worried about
he's Torkelson. Still in that like one series flips everything mode, though.
And we did a whole level, Dave and I on the Friends Fantasy Benefits podcast on Monday did a whole like 2-hour episode of like, are we worried on guys of like a bunch of different ranges? And like, one of the guys I think we talked about Torkelson, but we also talked about like Dalton Varsho, and like Dave's like, oh, I'm a little worried. And then he goes, and I was like, no, don't be worried. All the numbers are fine. And then he goes on, it's like three home runs in like 5 days. Like,
yes.
Like if a guy's your guy, like don't, unless you see something like the Tristan McKenzie thing, like don't.
Yeah, something like that. And that's what we've been saying. Like injury and severe playing time change are the only things that are like super actionable right now outside of guys at the bottom of your roster that you should be churning anyway.
Or guys like we're talking about today where it's like, hey, like we're seeing something and you'd rather like pick them up and they fall back apart than not pick them up and, you know, they go on to like fucking win a Cy Young.
Yeah. Oh, he
struck him out. Yeah.
That was freaking filthy, dude. Yates looks like the truth. I've been watching him obviously these last few days against my Tigers, and he looks like the truth again, which is cool. I like seeing him come back. That's a lot of fun. Reed Detmers. We talked about him. Last time we talked about him was just in our preview back in February, actually on Leap Day. A guy I've liked, you know, and didn't want to get too over invested in because I didn't want to have too many Angels again. But he's 3-0, so he'd actually be helping me. And of course, I didn't get him in either main event draft. But 22 and two thirds innings with a 1.19 ERA and 0.97 WHIP, baseball's best 1.61 FIP, because he hasn't allowed a single homer. With 30 strikeouts and just 7 walks for Reed Detmers. He's been amazing. Are we seeing him take a step forward? Because I know that there was some, you know, people were a little bit bummed that he kind of either stayed steady if you look at the ERA indicators or took a step back last year. If you just look at the raw ERA from 3.77 to 4.48, but his Sierra was virtually the same. So where are we? Is it finally? No, I don't even want to say finally, because that's not fair. It was his second year last year. Are we seeing a step forward from Reed Detmers here? Is there anything to buy into from these 4 starts?
It's unknown. I'm very unsure. The first 2 starts were dominant. We're talking about like 50% zone contact. Remember, league average is 85%. Mm-hmm. You know, 56.7% zone contact in the second start. Like the first start he didn't throw it in the zone. He kept it completely out of zone. But the second start he did throw it in the zone, and they still couldn't hit it. The last 2 starts, swing strike rates back down to a more understandable level. He's right about league average zone contact. He's started to attack the zone more, and guys are starting to hit it. I almost want to see him not attack the zone a little bit more. He's got good stuff that can get people to chase. I don't know if he's that much different yet.
Okay.
Now, he's not giving up a million hits, which has been a problem for him.
Yeah, and no homer. Literally zero homers.
Obviously, yeah, that no home change. Runs. Yeah. I'm intrigued. Let's just say that. Do I think this is the breakout? Not yet, but could it be? Yeah, it could be.
Yeah, I think this could definitely be the step forward here for Detmers. And again, big fan of his, 24 years old. I wasn't going anywhere. I do have shares. I just didn't get him in either main. But I like the swing and miss going up to a 15% swing strike rate, up about 2.5 points. We'll call it 3 with the rounding on his swing strike rate, and shave down the walk rate a little bit from 9% to 8%. Nothing too crazy there for Reed Detmers.
Andrew Chaffin looks like a Scooby-Doo villain, and I love it.
That's such a funny way to describe it. I see him too, like talking about how his earpiece isn't working.
He took his hat off and he's got the mullet with the curls.
His curly hair is amazing.
It's unreal. Like,
and he would have gotten away with it too if it wasn't for
you. You were finishing talking. Yeah, exactly. You were talking about Reed Detmers, and I'm all over here just cracking up about Andrew Chaffin.
That is so funny. Yeah, that hair is amazing. That is reliever. Not just reliever hair, that's lefty reliever hair. Like, he looks like such a lefty reliever. It's unbelievable. But yeah, Reed Detmers, we're in. You know what's interesting about Reed Detmers? Hasn't faced anybody but AL East opponents. How weird is that for an NL West player? At Baltimore.
Isn't some interesting scheduling early?
Right? He gets a home and home with Boston and then at Tampa Bay. Those are his 4 starts right now. Very interesting. And Josh Smith, fists of fucking lefty-lefty single around. I swear I'm not going to narrate the entire game. All right, Detmers next week. Baltimore, Minnesota, both at home. So one more AL East and then shifts over to the Central. We're starting that everywhere, yeah?
I think so, yeah. Right now, while he's pitching well, you got to.
Yeah, I don't see a spot where I'm not. This one's a little bit of a bummer because he got hurt right after he was announced that he was going to stay in the rotation. But I'm curious what you're doing with Cody Bradford then. He goes down with, I think, an oblique.
Back soreness.
Back soreness. Okay, so he dominates Oakland. Doesn't
sound super serious.
Doesn't sound crazy. Might even be like a little bit of like, you're maybe not that hurt, but we got to manage your innings anyway, and Lorenzen's ready to come back. I'm not accusing them of anything.
We got Jack Leiter and
saying, like, maybe they could have said, hey, we're either going to park you in the bullpen or like this. So whichever way you want it.
I don't know if it is so much gamesmanship, because literally like 2 days before, Bruce Bochy was talking about him, and they were asking, like, hey, when Lorenzen comes back, what happens to Cody Bradford? And I mean, I'm not going to get the exact quote right, but the quote was generally, when you're pitching this good, you're in our rotation.
Yes. And thankfully, he did confirm before the injury.
Yeah.
And like right after the awesome start against Oakland, he said, he's in our rotation. And so we were all like, yes. And then unfortunately, he got, you know, it was announced hurt like the next day or even later that day. But he's 3-0, Cody Bradford is, with a 1.40 ERA and an MLB best 0.62 whip. Obviously not going to maintain at any sort of level like that. Are you holding Cody Bradford through this injury just to see where it goes, though? I think I am, by the way.
I think you should in just about every format if you can. Yeah. Because, like I said, I don't think this injury is going to be very long. I mean, with pitchers, it's a minimum 15 days. But, like, so you got to hold for 2 weeks. But I think you should hold. And if anybody drops in your league, I would go and snag him. He's pitched really, really well. They've given him a huge vote of confidence in terms of sticking into the rotation. Andrew Heaney can go to the bullpen really, really easily. They've got a bunch of other guys in this rotation who've had injury problems throughout their entire career, in like, you know, John Gray and Nathan Eovaldi, like Lorenzen. Mike Lorenzen. Yeah, Lorenzen. Like, I think that, I don't know how many innings you'll get out of him this year, but I think they're going to be pretty darn good innings, and I'm willing to hold and wait.
Yeah, me too. I like Cody Bradford. I was super intrigued by him. The only reason I didn't go harder on Fab was because I wasn't sure if it was going to be a one and done with the Oakland start and then Lorenzen coming back, but I should have just said, trust the skills, and we'll worry about the role when it comes out. But yeah, hold him through these injuries. If he's available, go pick him up. That's Cody Bradford. Let's move on to Ronel Blanco. Let's check back in with him. We haven't really talked about him since the no-no, and he has not really fallen off since then, right? I'm sure people were waiting. Okay, this guy's going to throw a random no-no at age 30. He's nothing. Two good starts after that against Texas, one of which he went five hitless, ends up finishing six innings, one run or one hit ball, and then faces Texas again and goes six innings, two runs on five hits and three walks. And it was really only a bad first inning. So we look up and all of a sudden we got Ronel Blanco sitting at 2-0 with an 0.86 ERA and an 0.71 whip. Again, it doesn't even really bear mentioning to say that he's not going to hold that those levels. But what are we going to get out of Ronel Blanco this year? Is he somebody we're holding in all formats?
So it's really interesting because Ronel Blanco, very similarly to the Robbie Ray discussion we had earlier, you know, Robbie Ray had these walk problems, these home run problems, and so he started filling up the zone. That's what Ronel Blanco is doing right now. He's going, like, I got good stuff. I'm going to fill up the zone.
Yeah.
Yet he hasn't given up a home run. You know, he's got like a 48% zone contact, or sorry, 48% zone percentage this year. So he is filling up the zone. He's saying, hey, I'm going to make you hit it. He's given up just a little bit below league average zone contact when he's doing that. I think it can work.
Okay.
You know, I don't know. I mean, he's obviously not going to throw no hitters every freaking game, but, I mean, I think there is pretty good stuff. I even think there's more strikeouts than we've seen. But I also think he's willing to sacrifice some of those strikeouts for quick innings. And we saw that in that no hitter. So, yeah, I think you should be buying this one. This is one where I was in on Ronel Blanco in draft, like kind of towards the like meat of draft season, and once then it
was looking like he was getting in, right?
Yeah, but then I looked at their schedule and I was like, man, their schedule is brutal to start the year,
and he's so I backed
away from it. Yeah, like and he just went out and shoved through it, like, and you know, Verlander's
very impressive
on Friday, but he's not losing a spot. Like, no. JP France is losing his spot, right? So, yeah, I think Blanco's a guy you should keep holding on to. I mean, obviously, if you can get, like, a huge, you know, return in a trade, like, you can obviously do that. But, like, I don't think you need to necessarily.
Yeah, and I'd be surprised if you could just because he's 30, Ronel Blanco kind of out of nowhere. So this might be one where if I can't
get some great. You never know, though, man.
That's like, true. You really never know. People desperate for pitching, too.
I was talking with you and Eno and Jason because in my dynasty league, I got Michael Busch, right? Like, and someone in my dynasty league like offered me Jesus Luzardo for him.
Mm-hmm.
And I turned it down. Now, 3 months ago or a month ago, if I had been offered Jesus Luzardo for Michael Busch, like, I would have been like, this guy's crazy.
Exactly.
Right? Like, exactly. So, like, you see trades that would have seemed crazy a month ago get pulled off in leagues all the time.
Yeah, you just really never know.
And especially so, early on.
Yep. People reacting to small samples, overreacting to injuries, perhaps. Like I said, pitching's crazy out there. Somebody might say, I believe in this Ronel Blanco. And maybe they believe in Houston as well, that they're going to be fine. And so they want to get in on this. But yeah, he's faced Toronto and Texas twice. We'd have never thought that he'd be doing this with that schedule. So I understand why you kind of backed away from him. What about another guy that you've been a fan of? And we've talked a bit about, I think he was on a two-start episode. It's Brady Singer here as I pull up what he's been able to do. Oh, wait, actually, I wanted to ask you one quick thing about Ronel Blanco. I think I know the answer. He gets Washington this weekend. That's easy. He gets at Colorado next week. Is there anything he could do to make you start him there?
Hold on. I mean, okay. I got to look at his pitch mix if I'm going to make this decision.
Just to see if it would work?
He could. I mean, he's 43% fastball, 30% changeup, 23% slider.
Okay.
The slider won't be as effective. But
sure.
That changeup is really, really good. I might in a 15, honestly.
I might too, dude. He's been so good. So yeah, I just wanted to ask you about
in
that.
In a 10 and a 12, I probably wouldn't. But in a 15, I might.
Yeah, I think it's at least on the table, which is crazy. Renell Blanco in Colorado. That could be his regression game too, though. So it's dicey. Yeah. You just got to decide.
I can totally. You probably shouldn't, right? Like, but in a 15, like you might be in a position where like you don't have a lot of options.
It might just be your best option, easily to start Renell Blanco in Colorado. So we'll see. Be careful. I would lean no, but it's at least in consideration, which I never would have thought was going to happen. We did talk Brady Singer somewhat recently. However, he's made two more starts since then. Now, he was on our big strikeout rate improver episode, and it was, of course, small samples and all that, so we weren't trying to overreact to anything here. He's still up a good bit, up 26% compared to last year's 19%, and he also has 2.5-point swinging strike rate jump, which is nice. He has been good in the two subsequent starts, 9 Ks over 10 innings against Houston and the White Sox. He's faced the White Sox twice, Minnesota and Houston in the other two. The big 10K game is definitely boosting him, but there's been some things to like from your boy Brady Singer. Is he making any tangible changes that have you buying into this more than you've normally been with Brady Singer, who, like I said, you've already liked previously?
He's starting to throw the changeup less and less. And I'm going to go over to Savant and see if it's like a classification issue.
Okay.
Because we're showing him throwing the changeup only 2% of the time in each of the last two starts. So I want to see if, like, is that... Oh, no, because it was the sinker. It wasn't the changeup.
Okay.
We're having a problem. I guess we don't have a classification on the sinker.
That's probably my biggest hang up in baseball is like classification issues with pitches. What's what?
No, he's still throwing it. So I'm in. I'm bought in, man. Like,
again, this is the guy you loved last year with Brady Singer.
I will say the swing strike rate has dropped in his last two starts as well. 6% against Houston and 11%, which is fine. I would live with an 11% swing strike rate.
Yeah.
From Brady Singer. Okay. He's given up a lot more zone contact those last two starts. I'm in, but I'm also very ready to jump off, right? Like if this starts going bad quickly, I'm ready to jump off. I'm not as confident that this is a real change as I am with like Tanner Houck.
Right? Okay. I think that's totally fair.
I'm not ready to like try to sell high right yet.
Okay. That makes total sense to me. Gets a two-step next week, so we're probably going to be talking a little bit about him tomorrow. A little preview on that. Toronto and at Detroit, I think that's a yes with Brady Singer.
Yeah.
Pretty much all formats consideration. Yeah. Don't have to start him in a 10, but like he's on the table for sure. All right. Cutter Crawford. Speaking of Red Sox, you know, we've been happy with a lot of the returns that they have. I think they have the best ERA in baseball, led by that rotation for sure. And Cutter Crawford's definitely been a part of it. Now, the team is not supporting him. And he's part of why I have my same issue again this year, where I've got a bunch of strikeouts, good ratios, and no effing wins. Justin, he has an MLB best 0.42 ERA, and he's 0-0. In four starts. He doesn't even have a freaking decision. And it led me to believe that their bullpen sucked because somebody asked about it today on my box score show. And I was like, oh, I think it sucks because Cutter Crawford hasn't done anything. It's actually been pretty good as a unit. They just seem to crap the bed whenever Cutter's pitching for some reason. So I don't know what the hell's going on with that. But he throws a gem and then the bullpen comes in and says, "Ramp." That's garbage. So what do we think of Cutter Crawford? I know you weren't quite as keen on him coming into the year as I was. So far, so good. Obviously, we're running hot. Are there some tangible changes here, though?
He is doing the exact opposite of Tanner Houck. He is going outside the zone less, and he's trying to get people to chase him, and it's working. And I think one of the ways that he makes it work so well is he's got so many pitches that are useful. He's not a Brady Singer who's got like two, maybe now a third pitch. Like Cutter Crawford has like five pitches and he can use them in a lot of different ways. And I think his ability to mix and match is what's going to continue to make him successful. pedestal. Mm-hmm. Nothing he throws is overpowering. You don't go like, oh, that's a good fastball or that's a good curveball. But like, I think he can use anything in any spot. I think there will obviously be bumps in the road, but I'm actually a little more, I'm a little bummed I wasn't as high on him as you were, as our good friend John Legaiza has been for quite a while, because I've had moments where I've, you know, I think it's for me, when I sit down and I watch Cutter Crawford, I really enjoy watching him.
Me too. So nasty.
Yeah, like in the way he can use all of those pitches. And it's so nice because when you have, you know, four or five pitches like he does, like when one's not working, like he's got multiple other things to go to. And so I feel like, and I mean, it just kind of dawned on me while we were talking about him, is I always seem to like Cutter Crawford more in season than I do draft season. Because when I look at things in draft season, I'm looking at a lot of numbers and I'm going, there's nothing that's overpowering here. I think there's going to be, you know, I think he's just kind of a mediocre guy. But when I watch mm-hmm. him in season, because I'm more watching games, I'm definitely looking at the numbers still. But when I'm watching him pitch, I go, oh man, this guy's got something. And so there, I think that's why I missed out.
There is some of that disconnect between the numbers that Cutter Crawford puts up and how filthy his stuff is. In fact, that got him into some troubles in a couple of the games that he had to wiggle out of, namely the Baltimore one where he walked four and I think hit another batter. And so he had given up the five free passes, but he wiggled out of it and he ended up going five scoreless still. But his stuff just moves, man. And it's super impressive. I've really enjoyed watching him and how Cutter Crawford over there with Boston doing great work. He's going to finish up his two-step this week with a weekend tilt in Pittsburgh. Let's see if the team can support him. Mm-hmm. Love him for the Cubs. I think he's an all formats must start right now. I don't really see anywhere where I'm benching him. Mm-hmm. You know, shallower leagues, if it's like Atlanta or the Dodgers on an interleague something or other, we maybe take a look. But beyond that, I'm barely flinching with Cutter Crawford. Agreed. Let's revisit Paul Blackburn. We haven't talked about him in a while, and he just kind of keeps doing it. I think we talked about him after his debut, and we're like, okay, it's Paul Blackburn. Yeah. Seven scoreless against Cleveland. Cool. But then six scoreless at Detroit. Cool. Six and a third scoreless against Washington. Cool. And even this latest outing, it was three runs finally, but it was all in one inning against St. Louis, 5 2/3. So an out shy of the old quality start. You look up and it's a 108 ERA and a one flat whip. No homers is a key driver here. The strikeouts and walks are not off the charts. The walks are good, but the strikeouts are really unimpressive. What are we doing here? Is this the classic Vargas rule? If we can channel our boy Nick Pollock, which references, I think, the 2017 or 2018 season of Jason Vargas when he just started, it was 17 when he was an all-star. 17. And he just started like a house on fire and threw like 15 good starts. And he just kept riding it. But at the first sign of trouble, you jump off. What do you think here?
I mean, I do think it is the Vargas rule, but there has been some tangible changes, right? He's a guy that doesn't go into the zone, or previously didn't go into the zone very much, in order to get you to create weak contact out of the zone. And he's weirdly jumped up his zone percentage 10%.
Ooh. Like 10 percentage points, right?
10 percentage points. He was at 34.6. So he was not going near the zone. He was 8% below league average. Now he's 2% above league average. And
that's huge.
In that, teams are making less contact against him in the zone, which to me says, hey, this like little jump in strikeouts might be kind of believable. Because Blackburn's always been a guy that like you might get some good innings from him, but you won't get any strikeouts. Or at least not very many. So this kind of change is really interesting. Now, we also want to, like, the elephant in the room is he faced, like, the three worst teams, or well, not three worst, three of the worst offenses.
Putrid offenses.
In baseball to start the year. And then he went to a decent one, and he got hit around a little bit more. Not bad, but he did. And he also pitches for Oakland, which means I don't care how much you... You know how much you pitch and how well you pitch, you're not gonna get double digit wins. So he does
got
have
two more wins than Cutter Crawford.
Crawford got the same joke fired up right there. Good. Yeah. So, but like, if he only won like four more games the rest of the year, you wouldn't be surprised.
No,
because it's
not open. Even a little.
So, I think this is a. I think the Vargas rule, you know, Nick's Vargas rule is the rule to use, which is you continue to roll with him until he like starts really being bad.
And really give it one dud. Now, big test at the Yankees and at Baltimore next week. What are we doing with Paul
Blackburn? I wouldn't do that. I
wouldn't either, dude.
Yeah, but like, so like when I do my two-start article, like I've got five tiers. Like the first tier is the must-start. I don't even write anything. I just write this.
Just write the names. Right? Like, why do you have to do a write-up on Pablo Lopez? Right.
Yeah, like I'm not talking about Tariq Skubal or whoever has got the must starts, right? And then I have the last tier, which is desperate measures, and I don't write anything about those guys. He will not be in either of those tiers, right? So I'm gonna have to write about what I would do with Paul Blackburn. He'll probably be in the here we go tier, which is like the third tier right in the middle. Like,
okay.
I don't know, but here we go.
Maybe.
You know, it's a big maybe. So I think it's what should start. Here we go. And like feeling risky or something. Like
I could see, deeper leagues doing it with Paul Blackburn. But if you don't think I'm shitting my pants with it, like, you're not.
I think it's
like,
so hard be because terrified. Like, how much do we believe in the strikeout upside, right? Because you're not going to get wins, right? Like, we don't expect Oakland to beat either of those teams. So you're already dropping down to a three category player.
Mm-hmm.
So if you believe that he can get, and Brett is in the chat asking right now, like, are you starting him? If you need the volume, it's at the Yankees and at Baltimore.
Yeah. Yeah. East Coast swing.
I mean, at Baltimore stadium is in Baltimore. Happens. Yeah. I don't think I would do it in a 10. I think it really depends on my other options in 12. At 15, I think you have to. Like a 15,
I think 15, a 15, like, right. I get there.
Yeah. In a 10 points, and 12, I don't know that I do.
Points league, I'm more open to it, right? That's always easier to have, you know, wider thresholds there because points outside of like the real flameouts, you're probably going to get some positivity from it. But yeah, I'm trying to lean away from this with Paul Blackburn. And I've had some Paul Blackburn love in the past where I've kind of bit on some pump fakes.
I mean, so just if you look careful. At all of his starts from last year through this year, he's had 24 starts. How many starts do you think he's given up five runs or more?
Say that part again. I'm sorry.
So he's had 24 starts since the beginning of 2023.
Okay.
How many starts do you think he's given up five runs or more?
Eight.
Four.
Whoa. So he doesn't get bombed out.
So if you need, and that's what Brett's asking, if you need the volume, actually you do this.
Because that's like, yeah, that's he encouraging. Doesn't
get his head pummeled in.
Yeah. Okay. That is encouraging then, Paul Blackburn.
And in three of those four starts where he gave up five runs or more, he went five innings. That's, so at least like even if he gets beat around, like you're gonna get the volume. So I think you start him if you need volume.
I think you just talked me into it with that. I'm here. I am here with that. All right. So
scares the crap out of me, but yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's another little preview for tomorrow because we will be talking two steps. So we'll probably breeze by that and say, hey, refer to yesterday's pod, aka this one. Seth Lugo. We like this move when they did it. The Waka Lugo two-step from KC to or from San Diego to KC, we were applauding them for that. We talked about him in the two-step last week saying, yes, we're definitely going to start this. He's been off to a really nice start. The only thing that isn't really there at all are the Ks. And you look and it's a 13% strikeout rate right now for Seth Lugo. He doesn't have more than four in a game, but he's gone at least six innings in every game. And maybe those are paired a little bit, right? Like lower volume of strikeouts is keeping his pitches in check. And so he can go deeper in the games. That said, I still need better than the 13% strikeout rate. What are we seeing from Lugo early on that's helping drive a 105 ERA and whip? I love when the ERA and whip match.
So he's just giving up a lot of contact. and he's not necessarily attacking the zone any differently than he ever has been. Okay. He's not jumping out like his first pitch strike rate is a percentage point lower than it was last year. I think he is just saying like, hey, if you hit me, it's not going to be hard contact. 28% hard percentage right now is pretty darn good. 5% barrel rate is really darn good. I think he's just kind of gone. I think he's kind of been the guy he's always been. He's just, people are putting wood on the ball, just not putting good wood on the ball.
Yeah.
I don't really see a whole lot. I mean, the walk rate is almost identical. Even the swing and strike rate, it's a little bit down, but it's not like, it was only 9% last year anyway.
Yeah.
I really don't see much that's different, honestly.
So you suspect that the strikeouts will creep back up into the low 20s is what I'm assuming you're saying here.
Yeah, maybe not like super high.
Maybe high teens.
Yeah,
from here forward, I could see like a 21 to 23% mark from Lugo. He might not get his season rate up, to like make up for the lost time. But from here forward, I would still project him to be in the low 20s for Lugo.
Yeah, all the projection systems have him at around 18, 19% strikeout rate rest of the way.
That's totally fine.
That seems right. I think he's going to get those. I think, the whip's going to come up, things start to heat up, hits will drop in. One of the things we do want to mention is like Mikel Clark Garcia, I think, is a pretty decent defender at third, and maybe that's been helpful. Mm-hmm. And
Bobby Witt.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing like, I guess his strand rate is a little high. But like in the BABIP,
it might base be rate if you're looking on our page.
The BABIP's a little low, like so things normalize out, and he's like a mid threes ERA guy like a 115, 120 whip.
Yeah, he's running hot right now, and he gets Baltimore this weekend at home, so that'll be an interesting challenge. And then he gets to go to Detroit, so even if he gets beat up a little bit by Baltimore, he should immediately smooth it out against my Tigers. So I love what Seth Lugo's doing.
He's kind of just the guy he's always been.
Yes.
He's just not getting the strikeouts, and I think they'll come. I don't think they're going to be mastering, but yeah, I think this is just right now guys are, and maybe this is more about the hitters trying to attack him, and it's just not working.
Yep, I think that makes some sense. I think the Ks will come back up. They won't be crazy, but they'll be fine. The K's for this guy are crazy. Everything's crazy. This looks amazing. Jared Jones is on fire. Now, he shows why I really hate innings limits and not pitch limits. If you're going to do limits, which haven't been proven to do any good for pitchers, by the way, I'll just say that. But hey, I get it. I've been equating it to, punting. Like as a self-preservation thing for a NFL head coach, you don't have to answer why you went for it on fourth and you missed out, which is why I love Dan Campbell, because he sticks to his guns. He doesn't just choose to go for it when it's easy. He goes for it when the numbers say. But that's what it's like with the pitch count management stuff, where it's like, okay, they might still get hurt, but you can say, well, at least we tried. But if you do kind of go no limits or open up the limits and they get hurt, then you have to answer for it. So from a self-preservation thing for your job, I kind of get it, but I hate it. What I'm alluding to, is the fact that Jared Jones threw 59 pitches for five innings the other day, and they stuck with their plan to take him out after five innings. That's the part that's stupid. If you said he has 70 pitches, come hell or high water, it's 70 pitches, whether it's two innings or six, I can respect that more. But why just five innings? What did you think of this? Before we get into his long-term outlook or near-term outlook even, what did you think of the Jared Jones five innings of one hit ball, no walks, seven Ks against the Mets?
I mean, I get why they're doing it, but like, I don't. I mean, as a fantasy player, I'm like, oh, just keep Jared Jones in so I can keep racking up more strikeouts and more innings. And
we're selfish, though.
Yeah, but like, I mean, from a real life perspective, if they're going, hey, listen, we don't want to push you too far above, like, let's see, what do you throw? I mean, he threw 126 innings last year. Like, why can't he get to 160?
I don't know. Like, that's the thing. Because, again, these management programs have not been proven to do a damn thing. Guys are
and
still
he threw 122 innings the year before. So, like, he's had 2 years of 120 innings. Like, why can't he do 150 without it being – I don't get it.
That's where I'm at, too, with Jared Jones. But he's been amazing. He's obviously in all formats, must own, must play, all that sort of stuff. What do you think – we do get, and I will go a little longer term. I know we've talked about narrowing our focus down to the next like 2 to 4 weeks or whatever. But given that we know they're doing an innings plan here, an innings plan, not a pitch plan, do you think we're going to get shorted and we're going to get like 130 and they're going to like incrementally bounce him up? What do you think with Jared Jones's overall outlook this year?
I think it largely depends on how the Pirates are doing.
Team success. Yep.
Yeah, if the Pirates are like right now, they're one game out of the division, but it's at least a 3-horse race, if not.
It's been a tough. I don't think the Cards have done it 9-10.
Yeah, all the teams are in this, right? So, like, if we get to August and Jared Jones is still pitching, you know, even close to the way he's been pitching, and the Pirates are in second place in the division and fighting for a wild card or fighting for the division, then I think Jared Jones just keeps pitching.
Yeah, I think so too. Look,
I mean, I think it would be crazy to think that he wouldn't be. And I mean, they're going to get Paul Skeens, who looks unreal, at some point. Like they said, he's not coming up this week, but that doesn't mean he's not coming up next week. So like if Paul Skeens sit on your waiver wire in like a 10 or 12 team league or something like that, like go get him right now.
If you've got the spot. Coming.
Yeah, no, I don't care if you got the spot. You drop someone and you go get Paul Skeens.
I'm pretty excited about him too, dude. Could you imagine they're running the 1-2 punch of those two, Paul Skeens and Jared Jones? Ooh, baby. Things are getting better in Pittsburgh, y'all. You should get excited. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm pretty excited about him too. And we'll just play it as it goes with Jared Jones. Don't try to time it or anything like that.
No.
I think you just enjoy this late round gem that you have. What?
You'll know. Like, they'll say, like, he's getting shut down or I mean, they did this with who's the dude that everybody was excited about that just never seemed to pan out. I think he's their long reliever now. You probably just look at their roster and figure it out. Ronzi Contreras, right? They sent Ronzi Contreras was, like, the Jared Jones of that year. Like, they sent him down. Like, they sent him down. Like, so, like, you knew, like, okay, well, this ride is
over. Yeah.
Yeah, so.
So, just roll with it as long as you can because – He looks amazing. And I agree. If they are staying competitive, you can't get away from it. And again, you point out how Jared Jones has had some decent volume the last couple of years to where this isn't like a Mason Miller, where it's like, oh my God, he hasn't pitched at all. Or even something like if my Tigers are able to stick around, what do they do with Casey Mize, who missed, 18 months? That's a little bit of a tougher decision. Jones been pitching, man, 120 innings. I know it's not a ton, but like it's something. And it can be built upon well. Like, so I'm excited about him. Do not try to trade out of that. I would just ride it till they stop pitching him. Yeah. All right, Justin, that's going to do it. Some early standouts, again, using our new player rater. Check that out. It's been a great tool. I really love it. I love having the ADP there. That's actually one thing, not to just, we're company men. Shouts to the 06010. But I'm not just being a company man. One of the things I've always wanted on a player rater is the ADP right there to see relative to where they were drafted. How well they're like, I know mentally I have a general idea, but this allows you to come up with easy podcast topics too, where you can just let's pick all these guys drafted 200 or later that are high on the player rater. So we'll do two steps tomorrow and enjoy your night off ish. I know you're still going to be writing and everything, but you don't have to pay attention.
Take me like 30 games. Minutes. Yeah.
So, yeah. So
it'll be nice. So and we'll get some other work done. Yeah. Maybe I'll get to bed before 2 o'clock in the morning when we're recording at 6.
Do that. Because, we record so early. I know I will be asleep very early. I've been going to bed. I went to bed within in a single digit hour last night. I was in bed at 9:58.
Wow.
I don't know who I am anymore. No.
I mean, can't tell you. I can't tell you the last time I went to bed before 10 a.m. or 10 p.m. I honestly can't even tell you the time last time I went to bed before midnight.
Before midnight?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say it's been
years. Quite a while. Yeah.
I like being a night owl, but I have been enjoying the sleep. You know, I used to pride myself on being somebody who can be like a 4 to 5 hour type guy. It is better getting 6+. I will say that. Obviously I'm not breaking any news there. It's like, no shit, dumbass. Maybe you don't have to drink 42 gallons of Red Bull intravenously every day either. So yeah, I have been enjoying that, but we will talk tomorrow morning. Two-step pitchers. Talk to you later, Justin.
Take it easy.